Joining us now on the program, regular, former state representative, now the chairman of the Jefferson County Republican Party, Paul DeMarco is on the line. Hey, Paul, how are you this morning?
Great. How are you doing today, Jeff?
Doing well. Thanks for making time for us. I wanted to get you over, kind of transitioning from the whole CPAC experience to more of an Alabama-centric discussion. But first off, before we head that way, you watched the Trump speech. You saw CPAC. Your impressions, Donald Trump still seems to me to be the head of the, at least the conservative movement.
Yes, but let's remember why. It's more than just Donald Trump. I mean, it's Donald Trump saying what Republican Party voters want to hear. So, I mean, if it were just Donald Trump talking about, oh, we need to increase immigration, no, I mean, he's talking about, you know, law and order. And securing the border and creating jobs and protecting American security when it comes to the military. So, I mean, he's saying and he's connecting with the American public. And that's why he remains popular, because he has gotten past the media. He's gotten around Washington, D.C. to communicate directly with the voters. And that's why he remains popular. And why he was popular as well. So Republicans, Republican elected officials, Republican Party members need to remember that going forward, is that is what drives voters to the Republican Party, is those issues. It's not just personality. Don't, no question Donald Trump's popular, but it's those issues that drive the party. And as we see what's going on in Washington, D.C. with the Biden administration, how far...
Oh, believe me, we lost Paul there. I'll try to get him right back. He had a drop in, but I think he makes an important point with that, saying that, you know, it's not just a cult of personality Donald Trump everybody wants to talk about, but there's more substance there. Still working on getting Paul back, but I've always thought this, that part of it, the element that Donald Trump is this, he is this figurehead that we just blindly follow, was always kind of overplayed. That was kind of a media creation. Paul, have we got you back?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, sorry, you dropped out there. But we were talking, and I think that's such an important point. The media do this all the time, and it drives me crazy. They want... to put Trump's popularity on one thing in particular, and it's either his personality or it's his, you know, whatever they want to attribute to him. But it's not, I think it's a combination of a bunch of different things. I think the personality is important to his success, or, you know, some people would say it's a net negative, but it's been a net positive for Republicans. And then there's the policy side of it. It's not just one of those things.
No, and as long as Republicans continue to champion those issues and push back against Democrats as much as they can in the House and with the close membership in the Senate, folks will say, well, we're going to stick with you, regardless of the fact that Donald Trump's not the president. We're going to stick with you if you continue to push those issues. But if you start doing something different and going back to the old ways, of just kind of the go along to get along, as opposed to putting the American worker first, putting the American citizen first, then it's going to be reflected at the ballot box. So if Republicans do want to regain the House of Representatives in 2022 and regain the presidency in 2024, they've got to remember what the public is looking for in their leadership.
And I think there was a hope there, you know, obviously Mitch McConnell's speech after the impeachment acquittal, that Trump would just go off into the sunset and fade away, and that things would get back to normal. But you're never going to go back to that brand of country club or whatever you want to call it, Republicanism. It'll still be there, and it'll still be a factor, but it's not going to solely be the focus of the GOP.
No, that's where the Democrats are now. Democrats are the party of big tech and Wall Street and not connecting with your small average worker with Joe Biden stopping the Keystone and letting in illegal immigrants, aliens to take jobs, and shutting down small businesses and not trying to work with small businesses. That's the Democrats. That's not the Republican Party that has been successful in connecting with voters, because the voters say, well, there's one party that's for us, and it's one party that's for mainstream media and the elite on the New York and California. And if that's the Democrats, that's not the Republican Party.
And so, you know, I guess the Democrats, the media, if I'm a Democrat or I'm liberal and I want to push this agenda, I think you've got to figure out how not to make your message sound so condescending, not to sound like so paternal, right? I think that turns a lot of people away on the Republican side. Not that they're going to listen to Jeff Poehler give them pointers, but that's where Democrats seem to me to really lose a lot of folks.
Well, but you know, have you ever heard Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi not be condescending, or when Hillary Clinton was the spokesperson for the party? I mean, it's been nothing but condescending, and they look down on the average American and average person who voted for Donald Trump, and you know, look down like, you know, we know better than y'all. And what do they know about running a small business? So when they try to say, we're going to mandate you have to pay $15, you know what? If a business wants to pay their minimum wage of $15, that should be up to the business. And if they choose they can afford to do it and they can make their business work and operate, so be it. But this mandated $15 is another condescending that we know better than you on what you should do to run your business.
And it's also cookie cutter, one size fits all approach to everything. And you have to operate on all of their assumptions about the world. You see where the only thing that's going to come out of this, I feel like, is you get more outsiders, and ultimate outsider being Donald Trump.
Absolutely, folks who connect with the public. And we'll see more and more of that as we move through 2021, and hopefully we're getting post-pandemic and trying to get back. And folks will say, look what we've been through. Let's do a kind of a post-mortem and look at what happened and some of the decisions that were made by leaders, and who's going to put the American worker first as we're moved forward and trying to get out of this. And if Republicans continue that message that Donald Trump talked about, putting the American worker first, Republicans will be successful in 2022 and 2024.
Joined by Jefferson County Republican Party Chairman Paul DeMarco, also a former state legislator. Paul, you were there, and I wasn't able to attend, but the Republican winter meeting, the ALGOP meeting on Saturday, did you get the same sense, the same sentiment about Donald Trump that we saw on display at CPAC?
Oh, absolutely. I think Donald Trump remains popular because he was able to communicate with Alabama voters in a way that other Republican leaders had not in the past, and that connected with the Alabama voter. And so that's why I think he will continue to remain popular in Alabama. And folks talked about that at the meeting. And look, you know, Coach Tommy Tuberville, Senator Tuberville, was at the meeting, and he's a byproduct of that, of the popularity of Donald Trump. And we will see that reflected, I believe, in the Senate race in 2022 as well.
Joined by Paul DeMarco. Paul, let's talk about the business of the legislature. I guess the sexy issue has been gaming. I don't know if you've been paying attention. Senator Marsh comes out with a proposal that it got widespread praise from a lot of different places, a lot of places you didn't expect, particularly from the gaming interest. But as this thing goes on, and it went on in the Senate, it seemed like it just kind of lost steam. It lost some support. Certain parts of the state fell out. Then you have a component of people that are never going to be for gaming. And then, you know, for whatever reason, people just think they didn't like the idea of a duopoly system with Dog Track Casinos and the Porch Creek Indians. That cost it some votes. Does this thing have any prayer? It seems like it's going to be very – it's hard for me to see a path forward for it, because it just seems like it's losing steam as we go.
Jeff, what I saw as the pattern – in the past was a bill would get introduced, and then the sponsor would hear from all these stakeholders and say, okay, well, let me satisfy you by adding this amendment. Okay, let me satisfy you by adding this amendment. And let me satisfy you by adding this amendment. And guess what? by the time you got done with it, it was just a monster that nobody couldn't get through, because the old, you know, you're making this person happy at the expense of this person. And so I think that's what Senator Marsh is trying to do at this point. Okay, I don't have a casino in your district. Let me add one over here. But then somebody said, well, what about me? So I think that's the problem he's got, is the bigger the bill gets, the heavier it's going to get. It's just going to sink and collapse on its own, the bigger it gets. Now, I know this is the first time you've had a bill this nature that combines what everybody's talked about, both a lottery and casino. Then you add sports betting. But I think it's getting so much that you think you're making people happy, but in a sense, I think it's giving more ammunition for people who oppose it.
Yeah, and it's just the other thing that would trouble me about it, if I'm handicapping this bill, I can't figure out where it goes in the House. I can't figure out who in the House of Representatives is going to even sponsor it. But that's where it typically, historically, if you look at these efforts in the past, that's where these gaming bills have just gone to suffer defeats.
No, I agree with you. I mean, like I said, I think the folks that said, hey, if it were just a simple this bill, it would have a better shot. But now there are going to be so many folks in the House who are going to look at it and say, well, I'm opposed to this part of it, and I'm opposed to this part of it. I mean, can you imagine it, if it does get out of the Senate and it comes to the House committee and the amendments that get tacked on, and then to go to some sort of conference committee with the three senators and three House members, what that would look like? As much as everybody said, look, we finally got all the stakeholders at the table, I still think that there's a lot to debate on this bill before it makes it even out of the Senate.
And finally, Paul, let's talk about so Governor Ivey made some news. I guess it's been a week now. She was asked on Don Daly's Alabama Public Television show about some of these measures in the legislature to roll back, curb some of her executive authority, or at least add a check to it. And then the first is Tom Watley's bill with the state health officer, would give the governor some oversight and the legislature some oversight. And in this effort in the House, Becky Norgren of Gadsden has a bill that would be a constitutional amendment, I suppose, if it's successfully voted on. It would allow the legislature to call itself into session. It just seems like that there's an appetite from the legislature to do this. And Governor Ivey obviously pushing back against it. But I wonder if she did not, by pushing back against it, draw more attention to the cause and make it seem like that there needs to be more oversight over the executive branch.
Well, look, we're going to look back at this pandemic and say, what could we have done differently? And part of it's going to be the relationship between the legislative and executive branch. Now, I know what the governor's position is. Hey, we can't have 140 folks making decisions. I mean, you have one chief executive to run the show. And so I think there is that balance between checks and balance. And I understand where the legislature's coming from is like, look, we're not looking to take your power. We just want to have some sort of checks and balances here. So I think once we get through, right now we're still in the middle of it. So I don't have a problem, and I think we should all welcome the debate and look what happened this past year. Look at all the states that shut down as compared to a Florida, and look at the difference between Florida and New York. So this is open for debate, and we should welcome that debate between the balance between the legislative and executive branch on how to handle these type of public health emergencies. So we should welcome the debate, and at the end of the day, we can talk about it.
Well, as far as the debate goes, it does seem like we are in the middle of this never-ending emergency. Like, how long should you go in an emergency situation? And I think a year to a lot of people, there's ample opportunity that, we've stopped and the bleeding, and now we're at this stage where we got a little time to be deliberative and talk about these things.
And that's why I welcome the opportunity for legislative input because of that. And I think some of the bills should be debated, considered, hear from the governor, hear from the state health officer about why there can't be some, when the legislature saying, well, wait a second, maybe we can you can issue your executive order, but then give the legislature an opportunity to hear from the governor about the necessity of continuing it. And so I don't think there's a problem with that aspect of the governor having to hear from the public or leadership of the public, the legislative branch, on the necessity of continuing it. If it's serious nature, I don't think the legislature would stop a governor from continuing or a health officer from continuing. They just want to have some checks and balances, and I don't think that's an unhealthy to have this debate and bring up the checks and balances between the legislative and executive branch.
Well, I think where a lot of people got sideways with Governor Ivey was non-essential, essential businesses. What got to be essential, what got to be non-essential, no legislative input. It was kind of arbitrary. These people complained to their members of the legislature. Legislature says, well, we're out of session. We can't do anything about it.
Well, that is exactly right, because small business owners are like, why am I closed? Yet you can go down the street and was it alcohol or was it CBD? Did some of those stay open? I mean,
right. Yeah, the state liquor stores.
Yeah, they stayed open. Yet a small business owner with three employees was forced to be closed and said, look, we're a smaller spot. We've got a smaller footprint. We can keep our customers and employees safer than something that's a lot bigger. So that absolutely, understandably, raised a lot of ire from business owners out there, how they were shut down and businesses almost destroyed because of some of those decisions. And I think that's why it's good to look back at how this was handled and say how we're going to do this better in the future.
Paul, we got to leave it there. We're up against the break, but thanks for making time for us this morning.
Always great to be with you, Jeff, and your listeners.
All right. That was Paul DeMarco from Jefferson County.